So hello, my name is Jan Hubička, and I'm working on GCC for SUSE. And so this talk is going to be a bit about GCC, and it's a joint talk with Martin Liška, which is here. So in about 10 minutes before the end of the talk, he will punch me and start speaking instead of me, so don't be surprised. That's prepared. Okay, so I would like to say something about link time optimizations, and I would like to try to convince you that it's an interesting thing to try out. And so in the first part of the talk, I will simply explain what the link time optimization is, and then I will spend some time showing you some benchmarks. And then we will try to discuss, you know, if the open source can be one of the first distributions which are built by LTO. Maybe the first one, because I don't know about another one. So let's start about the link time optimization. This is the usual compilation model of the C compilers, which is starting from 70s. And in this model, you know, you run the compiler on every single source file, and you produce the object files, which are containing the final binary or final assembler output. And then you use the linker, which just glues it together, and you get your binary, which is cool because it's fast, and you can distribute the build process. But it's also limiting the compiler in the quantity of optimizations it can do, because it doesn't know what the other objects are doing. It only sees the part of the program. So the link time optimization is something which is being introduced since 80s. And it means that you compile the source files into the object files. But this time, the object file is not containing the final assembly, but it contains intermediate language. So that's what the IL stands for. And then, you know, this kind of fake object files, you know, they are no longer real object files, they are put into the linker, and the linker doesn't know what to do with it, because it doesn't understand them. So that's why there is a linker plugin, so the LTO plugin, and the LTO plugin tells the linker that the object files are actually used by the compiler, and it dispatches back to the compiler, which is the link time compiler. And the link time compiler takes all the object files at once, and it produces the final binary, which is fed back to the linker. And the linker pretends it did all the job at itself. So this is the basic scheme. And you can see that the LTO is kind of a change into the wall toolchain. It's not only changing the compiler, but you need to change also the linker and the R and all the other tools which are holding your object files, because all of them has to understand that from now on, the object files can be the real object files, but they also can be the fake object files. And why would we do this? You know, it's a lot of work. And the reason why we do that is to get a better code quality. So if you have the link time optimizer, you know much more than you know on the compile time. So the first important thing is that the linker tells you which objects, which symbols are used only by the code you see, and which symbols are used by shared libraries or binded somehow externally. So basically, you can optimize a lot more because you can somehow pretend that most of the functions in the program are static, and you can change them. And also, you can do the cross-module inlining, which is good because normally you have to put a lot of code into your headers. That makes the programs more ugly to read and longer to compile. And this way, you can do it somehow transparently behind the user's back. And also, the unreachable code removal is quite important, because if you see the whole program, you see that not everything is being used. And there are some other more things, like the exception handling optimization, which means that you can show in C++ programs that a lot of functions are not throwing, and you can remove a lot of exception handling information and cleanups. And you can also fold the identical code, and you can optimize for the code layout. So this is the basic list of the optimizations which you can do. And there are also problems. So one of the problems is that you need to change the whole toolchain. The other problem is that the compilers are much slower than linkers, because they do much more work. And each time you change a single file, you know, you have to do all the compilation work again, which takes a lot of time. And the next thing, which is a problem, especially for us, is that the bug reports becomes harder. because if your program doesn't work, you cannot just take the single object file and source code and send it to the Bugzilla. You know, basically you get the bug reports like, Linux kernel is broken if I compile this version with this version of GCC, and I don't know how to reduce it further. So this is quite a hell, and it's an important problem. And also, it's not completely transparent to the user. So most of the time, you can add LTO into your command line, and you get the LTO, and it works. But it doesn't work in complex scenarios. Like if you do the Linux kernel, you know, you need to do some extra work to actually get LTO working. So this is the quick review of what LTO is. And I will speak a little bit more about how GCC has became the linked-time optimizing compiler. So there is actually quite a long history of the LTO work. The LTO work started in the 90s, and basically in the 90s, the GCC was a compiler which was organized in the way that it was compiling every statement from the source code into the intermediate language, and then as soon as possible, it was producing the assembly, which was necessarily in the 90s, because in the 80s, there was not enough memory to hold the program or even the single compilation unit in memory. So at that time it makes sense, but it didn't make sense at the back of 90s. So from then, you know, we started to work on the high-level optimizations. So it was done by different companies, like the new inliner was contributed by Kolsosari, the unit at the time. I remember it was done by SUSE because I started it, I think, on the first OpenSUS or SUSE Labs conference because I was bored. So during the talks. And there was a new high-level optimization framework, which was started in 2005. And in 2010, it was basically done. So the basic LTO framework was on the place, and it was able to compile some programs. But it was slow. And that was solved in 2011 by adding a parallelization model for LTO. So since 2011, we are basically able to build Firefox in a reasonable time. Like on my machine, it's about 6 minutes of linking time. And I don't know, 6 or 7 gigs of memory, which is a lot, but it's also not that much. You need 10 gigs of memory to build Firefox in my setup anyway. So. How that works, you know. So this is the traditional link time optimization model, and the main problem is that most of the work is done in the link time compiler. The link time compiler can take a lot of time. You know, on Firefox, on my machine, it takes about 40 minutes to finish its job, which is very boring. So. What GCC does is that it's actually adding a whole program analysis pass, which is the only pass which is done in serial. And once we are done with the whole program analysis, we are splitting up the program again into partitions, and every partition is compiled independently. So the compilation times are much faster because we are able to use multiple CPUs, and theoretically we are also able to distribute the build, but we don't do that at the moment. So this is slightly more complicated setup, but it gets you pretty much all the benefits of LTO at more reasonable cost. So this is how the story continues. So since 2012, we have the framework which is able to compile big programs, but it still needed a lot of work. And basically the reason why I'm speaking here today is that in 2018, you know, which is this year, we finished the debug info. So you know, you can finally debug the output of the LTO compiler in a reasonable quality. So it's kind of comparable to the experience of debugging optimized code without LTO, which is kind of important if you want to declare the compiler to be production ready. So it was 18 years of work. And I will show you how that pays back. So this is the kind of basic overview how GCC works. Now GCC is containing the parser, and then it's containing a lot of optimization passes. There are about 300 of them, so I wasn't able to fit all of them on the slide, but I did fit a good part of it. And this is the split of the GCC compilation process. So the first bar, you know, the light green one, that happens on the compile time. So that's relatively cheap because each time you change the single file, you don't need to redo all the parsing and optimization of the all other source files. And also you can do it in parallel. You know, usually we built with the parallel make. And one of the design goals was to put as many as optimization as you can into this early pass. So there's a kind of a set of the early optimizations which is doing the things which are kind of obvious or simple. So it's kind of close to what you do when you have a high-quality JIT compiler like in Firefox. So we do inlining, we do constant propagation, we do all this kind of standard optimizations, which are win-win. You know, they don't get the code to be worse. And at the end of this, we stream out the object files. And once the linker calls us back by the linker plugin, we start with the serial part, which is the orange one. And we read all the program at once into the memory, but we don't read everything. We read only kind of summaries of what we have written on the compile time. And on these summaries, we perform the inter-procedural optimizations. So we do the difficult decisions, like where to inline or how to clone the functions. And we don't do the actual work, we only make the decisions, and we partition the program, we stream it out, which is here, and then the compilation part happens, which is parallel again. This is where you do most of the busy work, so there are kind of all the high-level optimizations of loop optimizations and all the kind of more difficult optimizations, which doesn't need to necessarily win. And we also have to redo most of the early optimizations, because the program has changed by inlining. But the purpose of the early optimizations is that the program gets both smaller and it's also easier to optimize. So the serial part, you know, the orange part, sees the program in a more realistic way than it would if the optimization didn't happen. So in the traditional link time optimizers, you know, the error optimizations doesn't need to exist. And usually everything is done in the serial part. So the difference in the GCC and the traditional model is this additional split of the compilation process. Okay, so I would like to speak a little bit about how that pays back in the performance. And let's see how I will do with the time. So this is a spec benchmark suite, which is kind of the standard way how you test the compiler performance. So every compiler developer knows what the spec is. There is a big committee choosing the benchmarks for it, and the benchmarks are supposed to be somehow representative for the system performance. And the bars, the zero means the same performance as GCC6. And the numbers are in percent, you know, the speed up, so the bigger is better. So it's not completely honest, because I should have started on zero and made it 100%, but then you would see nothing on the bars, because I wouldn't be able to show you there is a 1.5% difference in the performance. So mind that the bars are not very realistic, you know, if they go up, but they, you know, the performance doesn't go up that much. So the first part of story is that, you know, if you want to get your program faster, you might try to update the compiler, and we do get better over the time, but the progress is relatively small, because we are optimizing for the similar set of benchmarks for 20 years, and we couldn't optimize for 15% every year because the programs would be too fast. And there is a green is a generic tuning, and the orange is a tuning for a specific CPU, which in this case was the Ryzen. So you can see that the CPU tuning has improved because the Ryzen got into the market, but the generic tuning didn't improve that much. Okay, so this is the other thing you can do. You know, you can decide that you will use the most aggressive optimization. So we have the OFAST option, which allows GCC to get the bigger code, but it also allows GCC to produce some operations which are not completely correct, like assume that all the numbers are numbers in floating point and not on numbers. And here, you know, you can see that we used to improve by about 2% over the baseline, which means that, you know, the benchmark is really hard to optimize. It's supposed to be kind of system benchmark, it's memory bound, but we have improved a lot more in the GCC8. But if you look on the distribution of the single benchmarks, there is only one benchmark which improves a lot, and that's a benchmark which is called Hammer. And it's optimized by very basic trick of interchanging two loops. So sometimes, you know, you can see the big jump, but it's coming from only a single benchmark, which is somehow not representative in the geometric average. Okay, so this is what you can expect from changing your compilation flags. You can also say that maybe, you know, GCC is too old and you can use different compiler. So this is the Clang and ICC. Now, it's not completely fair to ICC because ICC doesn't tune for Zen, but you can see that the CPU tuning is pretty small. So it's I think it's representative enough. And again, you know, you can see, you know, how it compares to the GCC 8. So basically, you can see that most of the bars are coming below zero. So GCC is actually doing pretty well, you know, compared to the ICC benchmark as well, which is quite good, because ICC is a you know, one of the reasons for ICC to exist is to get the spec numbers to be good. Okay, so now you can try the LTO. And here you can see that the LTO is adding something like 2% extra of the performance. So it's basically the same as switching on OFAST on the older compilers. And that's coming without sacrificing the code size and without sacrificing the precision. And just to show how that works for other compilers, well, this is how the LTO compares to the non-LTO. So you can see it's fairly distributed. So you can expect that your average program will speed up a bit. And overall by something like 1.5%. And this is what you can expect from the other compilers. So the Clang is also getting some benefits from the LTO, which is comparable to GCC LTO compared to its baseline. And ICC is getting a lot more. The reason is that the ICC has really a big team working on specific optimizations for this specific benchmark. So we know some of these optimizations where they are coming from. Like in the Hammer, what they do is that they change the memory representation of the matrix. So instead of exchanging the loops, you change the memory representation, which is something which GCC simply doesn't go, because it's somehow considered to be specific to the benchmarking tricks. You know, we don't really know if we can do it in the way it would be reasonable for real-world programs. So, but the conclusion definitely is that while we don't have much space to grow for the parallel compilation project, because we are pretty much on the state of the art, you know, there is still space to grow for LTO compilation. Okay, so this is another thing which you can do to help your performance, and that's to use the profile feedback. So I'm not sure how many of you knows what profile feedback is, but basically you can use the option profile generate to GCC, and then you can run your application, and then GCC can use the data which are collected to optimize the application better. And profile feedback is kind of orthogonal to LTO, because in LTO, you know, the compiler has a lot of options what to do, but it doesn't know what to do because it doesn't understand the program very well. If you have the profile feedback, you know, the profile feedback tells you, you know, which parts of the program are important, you know, how many times the loops are iterating, which functions to inline. So together you can get pretty big speed ups. And the speedups can be pretty real, you know, like if you look on the Perl benchmark, which is Perl, of course, you can get something between 17 to 23% improvement, which is noticeable. In GCC, you get something like 7% improvement. So that really translates to numbers which relatively matters. And you can see that, you know, the LTO and FDO together is getting something like 7% improvement overall, which is pretty large, compared to the something like 1.5% or 2% for LTO or FDO alone. So if you compile these two optimizations together, you get much better result than if you do just one alone. And this is a quick slide on the code size. So you can see that in GCC, you know, the LTO is actually decreasing the code size, which is one of the goals. You know, if you want to build your system, you want to make the system small, not bigger. That's different with ICC or Clang. You know, the LTO is increasing the code size because maybe it's not tuned for this goal. And also you can see that the profile feedback is getting the binary slightly smaller than without. So this is, you know, how things looks like on the benchmarks. If you look, no, I will skip this one because I don't have time, but if you look on the real programs, the situations are different because the real programs are much bigger than benchmarks. You know, the Firefox is a lot bigger than the biggest program in the spec test suite because the GCC in the spec test suite is quite big, but it's old, so it's still relatively small. And these numbers was collected by the Firefox people because they tried the LTO in their official benchmarking server. They have pretty cool benchmarking architecture, and you can see that they measured that you can improve responsiveness of the page rendering by almost 20% or 30% without the profile feedback, and also some of the other important benchmarks improves noticeably, like Dromio is a JavaScript benchmark which was tuned by them for a long time, and TapPaint is a top painting. There is a startup time on the very end, so a lot of real world benchmarks are improving by this optimization. And like you know, they have this way of testing the performance. So the orange is the baseline of the Firefox. And the violet, or I don't know, blue dots, you know, I'm a guy. So the blue dots are the various experiments, you know, which someone has tried to do a benchmark. And here, you know, you can see the benchmark for enabling LTO. So basically, in 1 year of the Firefox development, this was the most successful performance improvement they tried. But they are still not brave enough to enable it by default, which we will do, hopefully. And this is, you know, that's also kind of interesting to me, you know, that's the responsiveness test. So you can see it's much more noisy. And if you see the history, you can see that the improvement is pretty good, you know, at the time. So, you know, going down is better than, so it's this bar. Going down is better than going up. But in the big scale, you know, they was able to get a similar improvement otherwise. Okay, and this is, just to quickly summarize, you know, how the code size works. So, you know, of course, that's something which is not important for specs because the programs are relatively small, but for Firefox it is. So you can see that the binaries are slightly getting smaller, you know, over the GCC releases because we are looking into that. And you can also see that the different optimization levels are making significantly different binaries. So the O3 is very large, you know, and OS is about the half of the code size of the O3. And you can see that the FDO, you know, the profile feedback is making the binary significantly smaller because, you know, a huge part of the Firefox is actually dead. It's not being tested by the profile run, so it's not optimized for speed. And this is, you know, how it goes with the LTO. So the LTO gets really quite big improvements on the size. And basically, it goes one step down. So, you know, the O3 with LTO is faster than O3 without LTO, but it's also smaller than O2. So the binaries are really improving in the size. And this is just to see, you know, how Clunk works. So, you know, they have O2 comparable to our O2, but their O3 is smaller and their profile feedback is, not optimizing for size. And the LTO is also not optimizing for size. It's the same story as for specs. So that's pretty much for the performance part. So to summarize, you know, the LTO now works and it can build big programs like Firefox. Actually, LibreOffice is built by default with LTO in the open source now. So that's why I'm projecting from Acrobat, because I'm not sure it will not crash during the presentation. And it's a very, I think it's pretty successful size optimization because you can almost always see the size improvements. And the performance improvements, it really depends on the type of your application, if they matter to you or not. But often they also do. And there's a lot of space for the future improvements because you can improve GCC, but you can also re-optimize the applications for the LTO. So, you know, if we enable it, slowly things will move to the overall better performance. And that's the end of my part. And Martin will tell you, you know, how that works with Open Source Factory.
So, I have a couple of slides about LTO and Factory. What we did, we basically took a normal staging project. We modified project config where we added dash FLTO to optflex. Now that recently we added position independent execution by default in the distribution, which means these options should be really used by every single package. The number of failures is quite surprising. It's only 80 packages of more than 2,000. The packages consist of all the KDE, GNOME, and base system. And to be able to test the staging project in OpenQA, we had to basically disable LTO for packages which fail. And then we are able to get a distribution which is close to LTO distribution. So, next step was to boot the ISO image which we got in KVM. And I basically find all the ELF executables and shared libraries, which is close to 7,000. And the total size of these files reduced from almost 2 gigs by about 5%. Note that this is also including packages which were built without LTO, so the real number should be better, I guess. Okay. And I have a couple of examples. The first one is the main library of LibreOffice, which reduced by 16%, which is quite significant. And we have also examples of some MySQL binaries, which reduced really significantly, but it's due to usage of just a limited amount of code. So, we were able to boot it in OpenQA, and it was able to success the tests, except some fallout, which was quite small, I guess. And there are some issues. The packages which failed, failed for various reasons, and I will go through the issues we've seen. The first two are some limitations in GCC. The first one was a bailout when we basically rejected two symbols being defined in or being prevailing in two libraries, which is a valid situation if you use no common option. The second was a real miscompilation where we decided to merge two declarations of functions. One was having attribute no return, and the two declarations had the same assembly name, so it was a real issue. The third one, it's the reason why most of the shared libraries failed. It's a simple versioning for shared libraries where you can have versions of interface of functions which you export, and it allows you to run executable which is dynamically linked with a newer version of library but still using some old interface, which is quite a nice feature, but we will have to add a new function attribute for next GCC release. Static libraries. So in general, we should not ship static libraries in our packages. There are obvious exceptions, like some error recovery tools for file systems, for instance. And what we have to do, we probably have to enable so-called FFAT LTO objects, which are object files which consist of both assembly language and LTO IL. And at the end of build of a package, we basically have to strip all the LTO bytecode and we have to verify that we do not ship it. What's good about it, it's that even if you have a package which you want to be built with LTO and is linked with a static library, it's possible because LTO can transparently mix LTO objects and assembly objects. So. We have some special LTO warnings done by Honza. The first two examples, this is issue. The first one I looked inside, and it's issue where you have a structure being defined in a header file, and it has conditional fields based on some macro. And if you forget to include, for instance, config header file in a translation unit, then you end up with a with the two translation units having a different layout of a structure, which can cause failures because of the size of is different and the binary. Yeah, so the layout in memory is different. Then we have some legacy configure scripts, which do grepping of object files, which is not possible if you use LTO. You have LTO IL in the object file, so you can't grep for a format of floating point, for instance. So it's quite rare, I would say. Then we have this tool, DWZ. It's a dwarf compression tool, which is being developed by Jakub Jelínek from Red Hat, and it looks he's not have enough time to enhance it to fully support LTO. So it's definitely what we need to work on. And maybe we'll see some higher memory constraints for a couple of packages like LibreOffice and etc. We'll see. And last issue I have, it's quite similar to symbol versioning. It's usage of top-level assembly. As you can see in the example, there's a function being defined in assembly, which is just string for GCC. And the LTO failure, which you can see on the bottom, is caused by a caller of the function is in a different translation unit in LTO, so that it can't find a symbol. It's quite easy to fix. You basically add no LTO to the translation units which use these top-level symbols. This is last slide of the talk, actually. It presents a histogram of text segments of packages. And it basically tells the most of the packages are smaller and few of them are bigger. The biggest size improvement is seen on executables, and the smaller is on shared libraries, which provide quite some exported symbols. And conclusion and so the conclusion of the talk is basically whether we want to have it in OpenSUSE factory being enabled by default. We hope LTO and GCC is mature enough to do it. And as Honza mentioned, we can be the first distribution, which eventually will maybe one day appear in SLE as well. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
So if you create the profile for your application for compilation, how probable is that it won't work when you start using newer version of GCC?
Well, at the moment, the profile is specific to the configuration and to the GCC. So the idea is that we have to train it during the package build. And the way it works is that in many cases, like in the Python or Perl, you know, we can simply run the test suite or do something like that. So in the Firefox case, it's slightly more challenging. So what they do is that they simply start the Firefox, they cycle through some pages, and they have a makefile machinery for that. So you need to open your web server, which can be VNC, so you don't need to really see it, and it does all the training each time you build it.
Okay, thank you.
So you built the whole distribution with LTO?
He did.
So how much longer it takes now?
Actually, I haven't measured it, but there will be some increase, but I would expect just a small one. So the overhead would be quite small, I guess.
Yeah. So like
No, it's for it depends, of course, on the package. But if I remember correctly, it was something like 16% for LibreOffice. So that's and you know, bigger packages are harder. You know, the smaller packages are easier. So I would say the average should be better. But for example, GCC itself is terrible because it has a static library which is called lib backend, which is very big. It links it into every single language it supports. So the GCC bootstrap gets much slower without EO. So it really depends on how the program is structured.
Two questions. Have you done any testings on architectures other than x86-64? And since you mentioned the sleeve for the future, does this impact our ability to do live patching?
So the first question is no. I just used OpenQA for x86-64. And the second question, we probably don't want to have it in a Linux kernel. Currently, you need a huge page set on top of Linux kernel to be able to build WSLTO, and it's not upstreamed. It's Andy Klein is working on that, and he was rejected a couple of times by Linus to merge the petset. So
yeah, actually, yeah, no, the LTO support in Linux kernel is interesting because it really trains a lot of strange cases which GCC needs to deal. But on the other hand, you know, the benefits are not as large because it's heavily hand optimized, you know, carefully handled code base. Now the benefits are much bigger on things like LibreOffice, which is huge and has much more abstraction penalty. So yeah, you know, there are some packages like glibc, which I don't expect we want to have LTO at all. And also, you know, for the x86 question, we didn't do the OpenSUSE test, but of course the performance and spec benchmarking is done by ARM and IBM, so they are also tracking the LTO performance.
The GCC code for all those LTO handling, is that generic code or are there architecture specific bits so that like say power might be the benefits might not be as large as now for
yeah.
Intel where
no, technically the only architecture specific part is how you pick it into the object files. So you need to understand the object files. So there's a different support for Mac, different for Windows, and different for ELF. But besides that, it's a generic. So it goes for all the targets.
What is the increase in the due to this IL code being added to the individual object files? Would that be noticeable in you know some packages having constraints for the disk sizes in OBS?
Yeah, they are generally bigger.
Except for something big.
Yeah, they are not 10 times bigger, but they are somehow bigger than the usual object files because they contain more information. But on the other hand, we are compressing them, so they are compressed, so they take yeah. And also yeah, that's something we are working on. You know, we are trying to reduce the quantity of information we are streaming because it's an important performance bottleneck. So yeah. I don't remember the numbers, but it's not twice, it's you know, some percent bigger. So I guess it's time for beers. Thank you.